It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know, it's I was just doing a little research, and it's amazing. These storm systems that are coming in are just creating, you know, I don't want to downplay this, but they're creating a lot of opportunities, right? A lot of challenges too. Harvey is estimated at over $200 billion in damages. And again, you know, it's going to affect a lot of people. Some people are going to be displaced out of their home for a while. Some people are going to be displaced out of work for a while. But of course, as I mentioned, this also gives us some opportunities, right? Some, maybe some road work will be updated. Not to mention, there's going to be a boom, if you will, for the construction industry. They will be hiring a lot of people. Not, again, not the thing that we look forward to, right? Not the way that we like to have things happen, but it's just the reality is, you know, it's just what happens, right? There's nothing you can do about it. It's Mother Nature. And so we have these immense storm systems that are going to be affecting us. And, you know, and so we want to, first of all, wish the very best of luck to the people out there in Florida, in Texas. Like a lot of people, I'm right there with you. And at the same time, you know, our bills don't stop. And we still have to take care of our families. My first guest today is going to be kind of helping us deal with some of this from a business slash sales perspective. Tom Hopkins is joining me. Tom Hopkins, as you guys know, carries the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized as the world's leading authority on selling and selling techniques and salesmanship. Tom personally conducts 30-plus seminars each year throughout the world. Over 5 million people on 5 continents have attended Tom's high-energy live seminars, and he's also the author of 18 books, including How to Master the Art of Selling, which has sold over 1.6 million copies worldwide. His latest book, When Buyers Say No, is receiving phenomenal reviews. And as always, it's good to have him on the show. Tom Hopkins, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. Always nice to join you and, you know, share ideas. We're certainly in some interesting times. And, you know, I'm amazed as we look at Harvey and Irma, the resilience of human beings that really say, hey, you know, we may be knocked down, but we're getting up and we're going to continue to strive to have a successful life. And but boy, my heart and my prayers have been going out like crazy to these wonderful folks that are, you know, going through this. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. It's just one of those things where really – there's not a whole lot you can do. And luckily, again, being optimistic, there are some silver linings here. I mean, first of all, we had a lot of warning. People were able to get out of the way. A lot of people were able to get out of the way and go through higher ground or get out of, you know, get out of these cities that were going to be affected heavily. That's good. I think, you know, we also have a little bit better prepared FEMA. I think that, you know, they were able to mobilize a lot faster this time. But, you know, let's talk about this, Tom, because when catastrophe strikes, again, as we're seeing, we really get down to the basics, don't we? I mean, this is really where, you know, you start to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And what becomes most important is, like, you know, the bare necessities: safety, food, clean water, and shelter. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on this, because I really, you know, like you were saying, we feel for these people who are in the middle of this, because everything else comes to a screeching halt. I mean, you know, again, some of these people are going to be displaced out of their home and their business and or their job. So this is an incredible situation. And so what's your advice to salespeople and business owners whose livelihoods are going to be affected so deeply?
Well, I've always had a belief that there will be that top 5% of the people in business or in life that stay focused and go back to reaching their goals. And it's not going to be easy. I think this type of tragedy wakes us up to have a big, better appreciation for the basics, as you mentioned. But I am so wonderfully surprised and happy to see how strangers helping strangers, how you saw so many acts of kindness that just absolutely makes you say, what a great country we live in compared to the rest of the world. And if you analyze the 7 billion people on the planet, with only about 301 million living in the United States, we have 5% of the population, but we have also got such wonderful helping hands, if you will. I saw so many examples of this, and of course, I think attitude is so important that people
yes.
have to work on that too, to see, keep yourself up. And again, I think if we look at the rest of the world and look at the whole global situation, we in the U.S. are certainly blessed and fortunate. And I just, again, my heart goes out, as everybody does, I'm sure, to these people. And yeah, I'm heading out Thursday to have a seminar in Dallas, Texas. So I'll be, you know, there to do my best to uplift the salespeople that come to the program, of course, and also, you know, to do my best to be an example of attitude during difficult times, because handling rejection and failure and crisis is something that I find champions, which is what we kind of call our top people, champions, that champions do. They don't stay down, they get up. And we've seen this year after year as we've had catastrophes, nothing like these two rascals. I mean, golly. But anyway,
yeah.
I think you've just got to kind of say, hey, I'm going to stay up and get excited about my day. And again, it's not easy, but I think that's what a champion does.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And you know what? Here's the, again, one of those silver linings. In a situation like this, we come to realize that we're stronger or more resilient than we are. And I think the other thing about a situation like this is that it really helps you focus on what's truly important. You know, sometimes we get caught up in this trivial stuff and we can get distracted on what's most important. And all of a sudden, when you are faced with a situation like this, you realize that it's great to have a nice home. It's great to have a nice car. All of these things are nice, but it boils, you know, but it also helps you to realize what is truly important, which is, you know, your safety, your family, and then of course the ability to continue to provide for your family. And I think that I'm grateful that you're going to go out to Dallas and you're going to turn these people on and help them get their head right, because you know, you and I both know, everybody listening both knows, that the difference between those who succeed, those who fail, is your mind, right? You get your mind right and you can accomplish all sorts of things. And this mind thing is a never-ending challenge, because if you're doing $100,000 a year in earnings, commissions, whatever, in order to get to the next level, you have to get your mind better, right? Or you have to, it's all that mental strategy, all that mental mindset. If you're doing $1 million a year and you want to get to the next level, the same thing. It's still a mental shift. Excuse me. And so this is important. And so like you were talking about, how we react or respond to these situations makes us or breaks us.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And again, I don't think we can express in just words the sadness and the severity for so many people. But again, I do always feel like, hey, you get dealt a hand, you have to play it, you have to do your best to stay focused and get yourself psyched up. And again, I think it will all bounce back. I know the last huge hurricane, and I think it was 1922 or 3, it devastated the whole country for a while, but there again, we bounced back. So I think that'll be the situation here as well. But I think you can't just sit on your hands. I think the people in sales have got to be almost more aggressive right now and maybe put in more activity than they have to build momentum. And again, I think that there will always be a need for products, services. People need the insurance and cars and clothes and all the stuff that people sell. So I think that attitude will determine your altitude as far as how high you're going to fly from this tragedy on getting back together.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the time to really, as you said, to really dig in and look at your goals, get your focus. And it's also a time where maybe looking at, what can you do outside of your market, right? I mean, in other words, if, for example, Houston is currently hitting its pause button because they have to take care of so many critical things, you know, can you pick up and dial and smile in a different territory outside of your local territory to make things happen? One of the things that I've learned from you and other successful people is that, you know, sometimes it requires more action. And this is one of those cases where it's going to require you to do more, not less. Not only can you not sit on your hands, but what you used to be able to do, if you were working a 40-hour a week job or 40-hour a week territory, you may have to work 60 hours to get your momentum back up. And I want to focus on that word momentum, because that's really what's going to take. Is you got to get out of that, you got to build that momentum. And many years ago, somebody mentioned this to me, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's a great analogy, and that is that the space shuttle expends 50% of its fuel getting that momentum going, getting that first inch off the ground. It expends 50% of its fuel. And when you look at these rockets when they launch, you see all this action, you see all this, you know, all that smoke and flares and nothing seems to happen. It looks like they're sitting still. And then you finally see them lift off a little tiny bit, and then they start to pick up more and more momentum. So I'm glad that you use that word momentum, because really you got to dig in deep and take a lot of action to get that momentum up and going.
Well, and true, it's like an airplane. Once it gets to the altitude, it can then back off on the power, and it won't fall. You'll stay. But again, it does take that fanatical amount of activity to get the momentum to where you can build from what we've had as a tragedy into your next level of success.
Absolutely. And, you know, now, again, I want to just, you know, talking to everybody out there, and this is the time that you definitely want to be, you know, plugging in those audios, you know, reading your books, just again, getting that attitude, just getting your mind right, because it's so vitally important. And if you want some free resources, you can go to tomhopkins.com/resource, I believe. But you can go to TomHopkins.com for sure. Look for the word resource, and there's a wealth of information to help you and to really inspire you. Is that right?
Well, not only that, one of the reasons we have the free resources is to help people who financially are right up against it right now. So that's one of the reasons that if they do go to my website and go to TomHopkins.com and then just go to the free resource page, it'll show all these things that we give as a gift so that there's no financial investment necessary to get maybe some attitude material, ideas on motivation and so forth. So, oh, thank you so much, Bert, for letting folks know. And hopefully we can help some of these people get through these challenging times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that there's going to be several. I know of one organization that is going to be giving away, again, no strings attached. This one organization is going to be helping local businesses in the Houston area by giving them $1,000 to help them rebuild their business. $1,000 may not seem like a lot, but it's what they can do, and they're trying to give $50,000 away, so they're trying to have the impact on 50 different businesses. And again, $1,000 might help replace some computers, or it might help with something else. But there's a lot of things out there, and again, the key here is taking massive action, really focus, and again, check out TomHopkins.com. There's a free resource link there that that can help you. And if you guys are in Houston or in Miami and you want to give us a call back and let us know how things are going, we'd love to hear from you. And Tom, as always, it's good to have you on the show, and I'm so glad that you came on today so we could talk about this very important thing. Because you know, the reality is, Tom, is that if it's not a natural catastrophe, sometimes we face other catastrophes in our home, in our lives, right? I mean, it could be a terrible accident, it could be an illness, it could be a death in the family. But sometimes we're always challenged. And I'm just glad that you came in and you talked about the importance of staying focused and the momentum and just getting the attitude, right? So attitude determines altitude, as you said, and it's the most important thing.
Well, Bert, of all of you, take care, and thanks for letting us share some ideas, Bert. And you let me know if I can ever help you again, all right?
You bet. We'll talk to you soon, Tom. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good stuff there from Tom Hopkins, master sales trainer, leading authority on selling techniques. And you can find out more about Tom and his team at TomHopkins.com, and you can go there and he's got all sorts of free resources, all sorts of information that can help you. And again, if you want to help these individuals out in the Houston area, in the Miami area, contact us. And we'll let you know some of the companies that we're working with that we have vetted that we feel are the best to support these businesses. And we are, again, we're focused on businesses. Why? Because if we can get all the businesses turned around, then they can open their doors, they can service their community, and they can also put more people to work or back to work. Does that make sense? And so that's why I want to focus on that. It's so important to get our people back. For a lot of us, part of our routine is going to work. A lot of us, once we're able to get back into that routine, then by all means, we can start feeling normal again, right? I think that that's just the first step. Kind of start normalizing yourself. And no matter what, maybe one of the ways that what I like to do, for example, is I start getting dressed. Even though I have no place to go, I'll put my suit and tie on and I'm ready to take action. That's one of the ways that I kind of mentally psych myself back into normalcy. And again, Tom mentioned prayers. There's nothing wrong with getting together and praying as a family, as a community. I think that prayer offers a lot of hope, and it's certainly something that should not be overlooked. It's certainly, I think it's important every day, but certainly important when you are, what's the word I'm looking for? Displaced. Anyway, give me your thoughts. What can we do to help these people? And what do you do? Tell me, what do you do when your routine is disrupted? What can be done, when your routine is disrupted and you need to do something to get you, snap yourself back into it, so to speak? All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm going to play an audio with Kelly LeBrock that I did many years ago, but it's one of my favorites. And never mind. We're going to play it now. And she was a lot of fun to interview. Kelly LeBrock, here you go.
Bert Martinez here, and this is a special edition of Money for Lunch. I'm side by side with the amazing Kelly LeBrock. Kelly LeBrock is an international actress, model, known for the Pantene Girl, Don't Hate Me Because I'm Beautiful.
Don't Hate Me Because I'm Still Beautiful.
I love it. Don't Hate Me Because I'm Still Beautiful. Hard to Kill.
Hard to Watch.
Oh, Lady in Red.
Woman in Red.
Woman in Red. All right, all right. And Weird Science.
Weird Science. That was a fun movie.
Man, how many young men did you motivate in Weird Science?
I think I motivated them in the wrong department. But I think there are a few motivated. It's nice. It's an honor.
It is. Well, I mean, what's amazing to me is it's become an iconic film.
Yes. Yes, it has.
I mean, it's how old is that film now?
It's about 28 years, like 30 years.
30 years old, and it still brings you a lot of attention.
And joy.
And joy.
And joy to everybody.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
And the 80s were a great time. You know, they were innocent, and we were having fun, and I think that the films that were made in those days have a quality that we don't get in the films today.
I agree. Not only where I think they were more creative because there wasn't so much technology, and I think that the acting was even better back then. Today, it seems like it depends quite a bit on technology.
Well, special effects. There was a reality to the stories. There was a personable thing that people could relate to, that we understood about families and their dysfunctions, and John Hughes was the captain of that.
John was incredible. I mean, I'm trying to think of all the John Hughes movies, and they all had a great little theme to it. They were all family friendly. They were all fun to watch.
Yeah, no, he was a great talent, and it's just a terrible shame.
Yes, yes. All right, so let me ask you this. Okay, you have reached a certain level of success, right? And everybody knows your success stories, but I'd like to maybe hear something that people don't usually know. Tell me about some of the struggles. Did you ever have a time in your career where you were almost ready to hang it up and quit?
I still am. when I was modeling, I was a big star in Europe as far as modeling when I went to New York, and nobody would use me for 6 months. I did not work. I was told that I was too exotic, my mouth was too big, my photographs were too European, and they didn't want anything to do with me. I've written a book. I've written 27 chapters of some pretty intense stories, and I think that when that book comes out, I will be well received, because my life has not been as people think it has.
Right. They look at you and they say, "Oh, look, she's gorgeous. She's glamorous. Oh, look how successful she is." But we don't always get to hear the backside of how you became successful, right?
Yeah, well, it will be out, and I'm sure there'll be some people upset about it, but it's the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help them, God.
I love it, I love it. All right, so what, when you look back at your career...
that didn't take long.
So, when you look back, are there some movies that you wish you have never would have done, or are there some movies that you look at and you wish you could have do over again?
I don't think you can do anything over again. I really wanted to play the role in the Michael Douglas movie. What was the one where the woman comes in and destroys his life?
Wait. Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction.
Oh, yeah.
I was up for that. But they were concerned because I hadn't done anything. And then I also went up for Ghostbusters, and Woman in Red hadn't come up yet. I think that that would have been a cool one to do. I turned down Beetlejuice, which I think was a mistake. But I've always sort of ruled by my heart. It's never been about being famous. So it was easy to give it up for my family, too. So.
Well, that's smart, too. So let's talk about that. You know, people always hear... do what you love to do, and then the money will follow. Do you agree with that advice?
Absolutely, because if you're doing things just for the money, that's the wrong reason, and money doesn't rule my life. You always have to go with your heart.
I love that. I love that. All right, so when, let's say, somebody's out there struggling, talking about, you know, some of our viewers here, maybe some of our young viewers, people who've been out there, maybe they're trying to get their book out there, maybe they're trying to get into modeling or acting or whatever it is they're trying to get into, and maybe they're struggling. Any advice that you would give to them as far as dealing with struggling or obstacles?
Struggling is a great way to know yourself. Just never give up. You can never give up, and always believe in yourself, because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will.
Kelly, that's amazing. I love that. Thank you so much for stopping by and great hanging out with you. Side by side here with the amazing Kelly LeBrock. Still gorgeous, still exotic looking.
At least I still sort of look the same. And I can move my face.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Benita Pandey, Vice President of Product Marketing at Threat Metrics. Yeah, Threat Metrics. Leading digital identity company, Benita leads the strategic vision and go-to-market for ThreatMetric products and solutions, is one of the lead authors of the most recent cybercrime report, where emerging digital business models are becoming new targets for cyber attacks. Benita Pandey, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Good to be here, and thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Now, this is kind of interesting times that we live in, and I want to just kind of jump into this, you know, and give me your thoughts. How serious and extensive are these recent cybercrime attacks among American businesses?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bert. We've been writing this report for over 2 years now, and over the last 2 years, we have seen the threat landscape evolve dramatically. Attacks are becoming more complex, they are more frequent, and they are larger. And this quarter, you know, was no exception. We saw over 144 million attacks across banking, e-commerce, and media channels. American businesses continue to be the primary target of cybercrime attacks from across the globe. Now, this represents over 100% increase over 2015, and that's fueled by the fact that they have fraudsters have access to more advanced tools, more data set. There is a lot of knowledge sharing amongst fraudsters across the globe, and you know, cybercrime is a truly organized business.
All right, so let me ask you this: do you think that part of the issue is that a lot of American businesses aren't taking this seriously?
I don't think that's the key issue here. I think the issue is that fraudsters continue to see so much money in continuing to attack these businesses. I mean, a lot of the American businesses are global, large consumer businesses with millions of daily consumers that come to their websites, interact with their products and services. So that makes them a lucrative, juicy target, so to speak. So while these businesses have tools, I mean, when I talk about 144 million attacks, these attacks were in fact detected and stopped by our network. And that tells you that these businesses that we work with are indeed taking these attacks very seriously. But that doesn't stop the fraudsters. There is so much money and ROI in these attacks because it's so easy to get data. You can get complete information about an individual for fractions of a penny. And you can then, you know, use the sophisticated tools that are available, like call it cybercrime in a box, to launch like very sophisticated attack on these businesses. So, Bert, what happens is that these businesses are continuing to see evolving patterns of attack, and some of these are very sophisticated and organized. We had an interesting situation where a large retailer saw very crude attacks on large ticket items, which they were busy stopping. But that was like so unsophisticated that they were wondering what was happening. But on the other side, the fraudsters were in parallel launching attacks on smaller transactions that for a while, you know, were able to, you know, kind of get through without, because they didn't have the focus. And then when our network escalated it to them, they realized that it was an organized distract and rob pattern that they were dealing with.
Yeah. And that makes total sense because, you don't, you know, again, when you think somebody's attacking you or going after your money, you're looking for the big chunks and maybe the small chunks fall by the wayside. I know I was reading a report where one fraudster was able to, I think it was over, I forgot the time frame. It might have been a year or 2 years, but they were able to get away with like $20 million. You know, at between $1 and $5 increments here and there. It's an amazing thing. Let me ask you this: in your report, were there industries that you found that were more vulnerable than others to cyber attacks?
And that's an interesting question as well, Bert, because you assume that certain industries are going to be more vulnerable because, you know, you assume that there's more money there. But fraudsters are very innovative. Their motives vary. And the attack can be aimed at any aspect of the business. So we see a lot of attacks that are targeting, you know, free trials at a lot of these, you know, social media companies, which is a freemium model. Now, we might not think a lot about, you know, $5, $8, $10 subscriptions. But as you step outside U.S. and you go into these emerging economy, that becomes a big amount for those users. So they are relying on fraudsters who are using automated bot attacks to create fake accounts and sell it. So that's one aspect. You look at these virtual gaming companies, and most of us think about virtual cows as being, you know, pennies to a dollar. Who's going to give it a second thought? But they are an active target because a lot of times fraudsters use stolen credentials. So consumers who want to buy an expensive, you know, fighter jet in a battle game, so to speak, and I don't play those, but, you know, people do. And so they give their account credential to a fraudster who's going to buy them the plane using a stolen credential for fractions of a dollar. You see a lot of situations where people are trying to sign up for free gambling credit, which then they bet on two sides, and then they can create their own Ponzi scheme version to defraud the gambling company out of a lot of money. And the other side of the story is the identity aspect. So not only are they trying to monetize the data that they have, a lot of fraudsters have created what I call identity farms. So let's say somebody gets my data and the recent breaches have refreshed, right? It's almost like everybody's data is out there. Every subsequent breach refreshes the information. So they take my data and they're fraudsters who are, all they're doing is trying to test the credential to make sure that that data is accurate, it works. And then they're sometimes trying to augment it, create a fake identity, synthetic identity, and sell it. So there are companies that are getting attacked, not because of what they have, but because they are the test bed. The companies that are getting attacked, not because of what they're selling, but they might have extra information about me that the fraudster can use to augment the identity data that they have. So we say every business is a digital business, and every business is a potential target for something that the fraudsters are trying to get at us.
That's amazing. Yeah, you know what? It just, It's interesting. The other thing that I've noticed quite a bit, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is this ransomware. There was one of my clients who's a law firm. They got hit by ransomware. Is this? It seems to be growing or escalating. Is that true? Or is this ransomware escalating, or are we just now just having to be hearing about it?
It is. I mean, I think, you know, as fraudsters are getting, as we're moving into a digital world, a lot of transactions are now, you know, happening through online or digital channels, and fraudsters are trying to find ways to, you know, to take advantage of those transactions. The ransomware attack, you know, as the one that happened in May, it has a lot of downstream impacts. Again, it demonstrates knowledge sharing, which we always talk about, because the code was released and the fraudsters used it. The other point is it talks about the anonymity that the fraudsters have. Anybody can now blackmail someone behind the veils of the digital channel, because we joke sometimes that the fraudster has evolved from being this hooded person working in a basement to somebody who could look like any of us, right? They are smart people. So this is on the rise. The other point is, you know, the patch or the vulnerability they exploited in the WannaCry attack had a patch that was released. And a lot of the customers hadn't, updated their system with that patch, which kind of brings us to a very interesting perspective that the vulnerability is now shifted as the ecosystem has expanded. The vulnerability has shifted to a lot of people, including the end customers, right? So there would be vulnerability. And we're moving away from a situation where there's going to be an impenetrable fortress that the fraudsters can never, break into. It's going to be more about detection. It's going to be aware of the fact that the fraudsters are going to evolve their attack patterns and being ready with that. The other interesting thing we saw on our network was the days following the attack, the WannaCry attack, we saw a decline in some of the transactions from legitimate users. And that's because there was this fear that was spread with this computational propaganda. There were emails going around saying, don't go to your ATM, don't log on. So a lot of the customers were wary of accessing their services, which gave fraudsters another, you know, avenue to attack. Good customers are not transacting. So a lot of businesses were, you know, didn't have a benchmark to say, well, Vanita logged in from here. She couldn't be logging in from India because I wasn't logging in, you know, so there was this, There is this downstream impact, the interconnected nature of cybercrime.
Wow. That's amazing. And all right. So let's talk about this. With the threat matrix, anything as far as that really stands out, maybe tell us what you found to be most alarming.
I think one thing has emerged is identity is truly the new currency in a digital world. You know, so businesses need to constantly stay alert to sophisticated social engineering attacks, more complex bot attacks appearing like, you know, legitimate traffic, and remote access attacks that for all intent and purpose appear to be from real customers. The situation is really made worse by the wide availability of identity data and the tools that I talked about before. Fraudsters are able to get complete identities and they're able to, you know, create new accounts. So we saw a 500% growth in attacks that were targeting new account origination. So a lot of times, you know, fraud has evolved from, you know, trying to use my stolen credit card or my credit card information to buy something, because those tools are sophisticated. I can actually put a stop on my account, you know, and say, don't transact, because the longevity of that card is very, very small. On the other hand, if somebody was to go in and create a new loan application using, you know, one of our stolen credentials, you might not know about it unless you're actively monitoring your credit or you've got some, you know, tools in place to be informed every time something happens. I was talking to an executive at a bank yesterday, and he said, oh, I got a text saying, have you requested a new PIN? And since he works in our area, he immediately knew that somebody was trying to port his phone number to another account. And that's another social engineering fraud where a fraudster is trying to now you know, log into an account, create a new phone number as the phone number that they will get all the text and messages from the banks on, and now they have completely cut me out of the equation. So I think the most alarming thing is the ingenuity and the of the fraudsters and the evolution of fraud patterns. We see it shifting. And as the identity data has become available, it's become global. So we see a lot of attacks from countries like Bangladesh and Indonesia targeting U.S. businesses, where in 2 years ago, these were, you know, a lot of the attacks did happen, come from U.S. So I see the identity data has trickled down to the grassroots. And these businesses, these small, you know, locations in a remote part of India, now those people have found a new way to earn their living, and good living, so to speak. There's a town in Romania that has the highest number of expensive cars because that's the command central of all cyber attacks in Europe. So a lot of that, if you ask me what's the most alarming, is the pervasiveness of these attacks and the identity data is how easily is it available.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I like what you said there, that these identities have become the new currency because, and then what else did you say, that there's a whole farm of, verifying these identities or these credentials, you know, and we know that, look, if somebody's got your credentials in just a very few, few minutes, they can do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
It's an amazing amount of damage they can do. Anyway, go ahead.
It's amazing. And, you know, what we talk a lot, and I think those of us who live in this world, you know, we enjoy catching these. And one of my, you know, a good friend now and the chief risk officer of a lending company out of Australia called MoneyPlace, and he and I were talking, and he said one time he saw a loan application that had, you know, over 6 years of credit history, great credit score, but our system flagged it as a fraudulent transaction. And so when he went back and looked at it, it turned out to be the customer's first name was fake, last name was name. And it was almost like, you know, one of those crime novels where the criminal is now taunting the police by leaving their signature on the, you know, the things that they steal. This was very similar to that, where the fraudster was now not even trying to create a fake name. You know, the name was first name was fake, last name was name. And the email address is faker at whatever email.com. So very interesting evolution.
All right. So let's talk about this. Again, the report is called Threat Matrix. So in your report, Threat Matrix, what are the, let's say, top things, top five tips that you would tell somebody to prevent cyber attacks?
Yeah, and that's, you know, these things have been the same. I think context is, you know, we say if the customer is the king, context is definitely the queen. You need to have shared information. We always say it takes a network to fight a network, and cybercrime is very organized, very networked. So what we rely on is this global shared intelligence from all these transactions, which enable businesses to, you know, identify good customers from bad. The good news about digital transactions is all the information that you have at your fingertips to analyze in real time. So that's really, really the key. Also, you know, building a foolproof system is going to be impossible. So detection is going to be the key. And the key is to work with a system that can evolve and identify the evolving attack patterns. So if the bot traffic shifts, or if you see a lot of social engineering attacks or a lot of transactions looking like something I'll give you an example. A lot of charities which take transactions for any dollar amount, we see a lot of credit card testing happening on charities where the dollar amount is $5 or less. And the charities wouldn't even know about it, but we were able to detect, no, it looks like the same pattern. This person tried to make, you know, 700 donations in the last 20 minutes using, you know, 300 cards coming from another country. These are all stolen credentials. So again, being able to recognize these evolving patterns is really important. The other thing is to have a tool that goes beyond one element. Because one thing that has happened is as the fraud patterns have evolved, people go and try to deploy point solutions. And I think the key is to have an end-to-end platform that's looking at everything in context to do that. But and definitely working with a tool is going to be crucial because the battle against you know, Foster is just getting started. There is so much money in there. You know, there's a stat that says that cybercrime has overtaken drug trafficking as in terms of value. And that happens to be that that's probably true. And, you know, in an identity world, you can resell an identity multiple times. So again, it's a gift that keeps on giving for the fraudsters. It's constantly trying to use it. And the key is to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so share the information. When you say share the information, you're talking about sharing the different, threat information. When you say share the information specifically, what information should I be looking to share?
Yeah, Bert, it comes down to we have this platform that anonymizes information. So when you're transacting as a consumer, we look at your anonymized digital identity, and we then have that information stored. It's completely anonymized. We don't see it, but we don't need to know your name to know who you are. So we have a lot of information around the transacting user without, you know, getting into who that user is. So that anonymized intelligence helps businesses make identification. So if I can tell you that if you transact at a retailer and we can say, well, this customer, this device, this email address was seen in the network and positively, you know, cleared authentication on another business, then there is that shared intelligence. At the same time, you know, that helps us identify patterns of fraudulent transaction that, well, this device has just tried to make 15 transactions on, you know, six different businesses, or, you know, this device was seen, has this email which was seen on another device, and these two devices tried to apply for two loans at the same time. So again, those anonymized intelligence become the foundation for being able to make accurate decision. The other aspect is, you know, the ability to use behavior analytics and machine learning and a lot of, you know, we call it dynamic data around, you know, the user's, you know, non-PII information which goes into your device. You know, where have you come from? What are your locations? Are you coming from a trusted location? And that becomes key to, you know, differentiating a good customer from bad.
Gotcha. Do you think with the use of artificial intelligence, do you think that artificial intelligence is going to be helpful in a situation with these cyber attacks, or do you think that the bad guys themselves will be also using artificial intelligence?
I mean, I think the fraudsters have access to some of the most sophisticated tools in the world. I mean, it's a very organized business. They probably have, you know, meetings and seminars to discuss what they're doing and what's happening, because you see one attack patterns evolve. So I wouldn't put it past them. You know, machine learning or artificial intelligence is definitely the key or definitely a great solution, but it also depends on the information, right? Your machine learning model are going to work as well as the information you have. Again, information is a key, and that's what, when we look at our system, we look at the global shared intelligence, the real-time, you know, data that we have from billions of transactions, and that becomes the key ingredient into the machine learning models that we have. So, again, there is no silver bullet in this fight against, you know, this ever-evolving fraud pattern. The key is to have, you know, if you just rely on machine learning model, you'd probably have false positive or get into, you know, situation where the fraudsters are circumventing your model. If you just rely on behavior analytics, that's going to be the key as well. You know, that is also something that will leave you vulnerable. The key is to have an integrated approach. And from our perspective, we call it, you know, smart learning. Smart analytics is the combination of behavior analytics and machine learning that can give you a great insight. So, again, it is about relying on these tools, but being aware that it has to be in a continuum. There is no silver bullet.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about Threat Matrix, threatmatrix.com. How does Threat Matrix, you know, help businesses? Give us a quick overview of what you guys do.
Sure. So we call ourselves a decision engine for seamless digital businesses. And the core is that in a digital world, you know, every business is a digital business, whether you're a plumber, whether you are running a construction firm, or whether you're a content sharing or a retailer, you have to have digital presence. And as we work with these banks, these retailers, these media companies, a lot of these social, you know, the sharing economy companies. The two aspects of the business that we need to solve for, one is the ability to deliver great customer experience or great frictionless experience to good customers while stopping the fraudsters and being aware of the evolving fraud pattern. So I talked about the digital identity network. That's a platform that takes the shared intelligence from billions of, you know, transactions every month across the globe. We see transactions from over 200 countries. We have billions of active devices, emails. We track a lot of, you know, users on a, again, it's anonymized, but track a lot of users at any given point in time. And so what we then have is this ability to, for customers to take, get that information in real time at the time of transaction. We have sophisticated tools that let the customers make decision by using a policy engine. They can set their custom rules. They can use machine learning, behavior analytics, case management. So it gives an end-to-end platform. We always say that best intelligence powers best decision, and that delivers a smart authentication for the customer. You're able to authenticate every user in the most accurate way at any given point in time. And it's powered by this crowdsourced identity intelligence that we have from our network.
Gotcha. You know, this is such an amazing thing. And it's something really that we're only going to get more and more of. And so people really need to look at their security and how they're protecting themselves. If you guys have questions about what Benita is talking about, you can go to threatmatrix.com, find out more about them. And if somebody wants to get the cybercrime report, is it available at threatmatrix.com?
It is available on threatmatrix.com, and you can go to the website in the resource center. And it's a great read. We're now getting started on the Q3 report, and I'm excited to see how the patterns have evolved. It's a great time. You know, you look at the back to school shopping, talk about the predictions for what the holiday season is going to be. So it's going to be really interesting.
Well, you know what? The other thing that popped into mind is what's going to happen with all these catastrophes. You know, we have Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, and all these other stuff. I see that as a vulnerability as well.
Absolutely. And I think every time something like this happened, or you look at the geopolitical event, you know, the day following Brexit, we saw a transaction, and, you know, fraud uptick. Because what happens is you look at the cybercrime and the good transaction, fraudsters are not waiting to say, okay, I'm going to attack more on Black Friday. They are attacking constantly. Obviously, as the big holiday season rolls around, you know, they become more aware and more focused on attacking a certain transaction type. But every time a catastrophe hits, every time, you know, people have their eyes off the ball, or the consumers, right? I mean, if somebody is stuck in that, you know, in Irma or Harvey, in the aftermath of that and dealing with it, they probably don't have the bandwidth to realize that their information might have been breached, right? And at that point in time, they are easy target for fraudsters to go in and attack and you know, take advantage of the situation. It's not like they're going to say, well, I think, you know, let's leave the people in Florida and Texas right now because they have a lot on their mind. They don't care.
Right.
They are attacking those transactions.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that's what makes it more vulnerable, is because people are
absolutely
so distracted. There's so much thing, you know, you're overwhelmed with all this different stuff that this is a time
absolutely.
That you put your guard down and they grab your data. So, Benita,
absolutely.
It's been wonderful to have you on the show. We're out of time. And looking forward to having you back again talking about threat metrics and the cyber crime report. Benita Pandey, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks, Bert.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Good stuff there from Benita Pandey. Again, the company threatmatrix.com. You can go there. You can get the report for free, cyber crime report, and start being aware of how to protect yourself. And again, we appreciate you stopping by. We appreciate you guys, your listenership and helping us spread the word here at Money for Lunch. Remember, as always, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.